Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
With less than 3 weeks to the midterm elections, candidates on ballots across more than half the country have been campaigning on the outright lie that Donald Trump didn't lose the 2020 election. Now, some are willing to say that Joe Biden is president, but not that he won. Here's Georgia Republican congressional incumbent Marjorie Taylor Greene being questioned by her Democratic challenger Marcus Flowers in their debate on Sunday.
Did Joe Biden win the election, Congresswoman Greene?
Joe Biden is the president of the United States,
absolutely,
Marcus.
But you pushed a big lie that said he did not win the election.
There was
and
election fraud.
You drove those people to the Capitol on January 6th
there was
with
fraud
your lie.
Election.
We're going to move on. Josh Rowe, it's
election
your turn
fraud,
to ask
and my
a question
has
to Marjorie
of it.
Taylor
okay.
Greene.
Again, there's been little evidence of fraud. But this week's New York Times Siena University poll found that in addition to doubting 2020, 28% of all voters, including 41% of Republicans, have little to no faith in the upcoming midterm results. They've lost faith in the bedrock of democracy and lost friends and loved ones. The poll shows Americans think people on the other side are not good people. What can be done to combat this massive, unhealthy contagion of misinformation? It feels like we've had one pandemic, COVID, and another, lies. Well, Dr. Seema Yasmin is a public health and communications expert. She was a disease investigator at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And now she's director of the Stanford Health Communications Initiative and author of What the Fact? Finding Truth in All the Noise. She says misinformation is a public health problem, and it's our democracy that's getting sick. Dr. Yasmin, this is a public health problem.
Absolutely, Robin. The viral spread of misinformation and disinformation, whether it's election falsehoods, campaigning around so-called ballot mules, is dismantling the very fundamentals of democracy. And it's why so many of your own physicians and nurses might talk about voting as an act of public health, and why myself as a public health doctor and a journalist will also talk about local news being the immune system of a democracy. However, unfortunately, in the US, with the growth of news deserts, it's a very crumbling immune system.
Oh, you've said a lot there. First of all, you mentioned ballot mules. This is the documentary that is filled with falsehoods, including one that poll workers are mules for bringing bags of false ballots into election places to try to tip elections. It's completely false. So that's one of the viruses. You know, talk about lies, falsehoods being viruses. You started as a medical doctor. You were a disease detective with the CDC. And did you watch misinformation travel like a virus?
Every single time, Robin, I was sent into another place where there was an outbreak of infection in the U.S., I saw on the front lines, in tandem with the spread of disease, was this viral spread of lies, of medical myths and health hoaxes, whether it was anti-vaccine or anti-government. And I couldn't just deal with the infection contagion. I also had to deal with the information contagion. And unfortunately, so many of us in public health and medicine, we're not given that training. And that's why I then left the CDC to go to journalism school, because I understood we were not going to continue to make strides in public health until we could also grapple with the contagious nature of information that was anti-public health.
And you saw that the models used to track the spread of misinformation are similar to the mathematical models used by disease scholars.
Oh, they're actually exactly the same. And this blew my mind, that as a disease detective, I use these mathematical models that can tell you in a week or so how bad might this outbreak be, who else might be sick. When I transitioned then into communications research, I saw the exact same models were being used to track not the spread of a virus, but the spread of a tweet, the spread of a meme. And so this information is as contagious as an infection.
Well, health workers have had to fight misinformation about vaccines, masks, boosters, and when those lies spread, people get physically sick. We can see it. But when lies about voting machines, which we have to repeat it, the 2020 election was one of the safest, fairest in American history. When you have counties we've reported on, for instance, that are throwing out their voting machines because they believe the lie that they didn't work, How does that bring sickness?
Well, one, in a very direct sense, we're seeing these conspiracy theories, these trending hashtags of stop the steal, as if there's this rampant election fraud that actually doesn't exist. This goes, Robin, from being online threats to real world attacks where there are citizen policing and stakeouts of polling stations, which have been studied previously and found to particularly intimidate voters of color, poorer voters. And so we can then see a direct impact on who gets to vote. But then on just a grander level, even when it's not directly linked to health and science policy, we're seeing the dismantling of the very fundamentals of a democracy, which is the ability to vote.
Well, I'm going to jump in and say that we saw the images of January 6th. I believe that the huge number of people there sincerely believed the lies that they were told, that they were saving democracy. They didn't look very well. I mean, there's an illness from being fed lies and taking them in and thinking, if you don't do something, your very world is at stake.
And they are being manipulated by an actually sophisticated disinformation campaign, which is checking all the boxes of time-tested disinformation tactics that we know can indoctrinate people and make them believe lies. And unfortunately, what we're not seeing enough of is an offering of tools to the American public, an offering of strategies as to how you can better spot not just misinformation, but disinformation. Disinformation is false information, but it's false information spread with the intention of causing harm and causing chaos. And unfortunately, many of us, if not all of us, are susceptible to believing in misinformation and disinformation, which is why we need education around digital literacy, media literacy, and critical thinking.
How else do we inoculate against disinformation? I know that there are people who have studied preempting belief in disinformation by having people watch videos. What else can we do to inoculate against it?
I think that's a great question. And you use the word inoculate. And actually, there is a theory that's being tested and been proven called inoculation theory, which borrows a metaphor from medicine that if you give someone a flu shot, you're exposing them to a mild or weakened version of the virus so that when they're then exposed to it, they have this really healthy response and they're protected. You can do the same with disinformation. You can expose people to a small and weakened dose of an incoming lie. And what it does is it actually develops what we're starting to call these mental or cognitive antibodies. It's like you develop this mental immunity against all the lies and the BS that's out there.
Give us an example of what this small amount would be.
So, for example, you could fast forward to the midterms happening very soon. We're tracking all the falsehoods that are spreading. Some of them may not have hit everybody just yet. And you can say to them, we think you're going to be exposed to a lie again about voter fraud, about ballot mules. People may not have heard of that term yet. You break it down for them and you tell them why that incoming lie is false. And you give them a truthful counter narrative. And that's been proven to develop that kind of mental immunity, to give them those mental antibodies. And we're just not doing enough of that.
Well, can you give us one example now? If, for instance, your beloved uncle believes that there are ballot mules, what might at least part of that exchange sound like?
So the thing not to do is that you don't just want to hit them over the head with facts, because often they've already heard the facts. So say your uncle's already heard that actually it's been debunked, the 2020 election was not stolen, the election machines, the voting machines were fine. You don't just want to repeat facts he's already heard. What you actually want to do, which is really hard, I get it, but do it, is ask questions about why do you believe that? Where did you hear that? And you have to get a little bit deep with this, which is often why it's not a one-and-done conversation. Belief is very tied up in belonging, and versions of truth are very tied up in our identity, which is why conversations about things that shouldn't be heated get super heated, because you're not just disagreeing about a vaccine or about an election. You're often actually disagreeing about somebody's core beliefs and their identity. So get down to that slowly, gradually, compassionately. And then you can start shifting the needle.
So that's how maybe you talk to your uncle. How do you scale that up? How do we as a country scale that up?
I think three things need to happen, Robin. One, on that individual level, we need to make people aware that there's evidence, there's an evidence base for how to disagree, for how to effectively debunk myths without making the other person just digging their heels more. Then there's working with the social media platforms, teaching people digital literacy, of course, but holding these platforms accountable for the millions of views that they are amplifying that purport that 2020 election was stolen when we know it wasn't. And then thirdly, there's what some people would refer to as the mainstream media, where instead of often these mentions of the big lie or about policymakers who are lying about a stolen election, those policymakers are described in headlines as skeptics, as election deniers, as disputing something as if there's something to dispute.
Dr. Seema Yasmin, she's director of the Stanford Health Communication Initiative. She's also the author of What the Fact? Finding Truth in All the Noise. Dr. Yasmin, thank you so much.
Robin, thank you for having me.